hugely disappointing performance was against the Blues, mate. That Western Force team. Talk to me.
No, it was the Rebels to begin with.
The Rebels, sorry. The Western Force fucking sucked too, to the Chiefs. They all suck.
Yeah. Hey, and welcome to another round of the Rugby Report Card with me this week to review round 11. An up and down round for the Australian teams are Blake and Jim. How are you, boys?
Yeah, real good, mate. Coming in very, very strongly here on this microphone. Some feedback from last week, which we always appreciate. Those technical issues resolved and resolved.
Sounding beautiful and clear, Jim. And how are you, Blake?
Man, I'm fantastic. You've Jim solved and resolved and sounding crystal clear. I know it's going to be a good pod. So I'm up and about, happy to chat with you fellas.
We're talking about, so as we've got Jim crystal clear at the moment, let's start on the positives. Let's get on the Reds bandwagon. Let's throw the usual order out and start off with the Reds Crusaders. First time in 25 years, I think it was, the Reds go to Christchurch and get a victory, 33-28. And some massive performances from a number of those players. Jim, who were your standout performances in the game?
Well, the game turned on a dime when that Harry Wilson charge down went down. Like it was, they were held out for a couple of minutes, couple of sets before it. It looked like Crusaders were going to just blitz them through open field at the end. And then out of nowhere, the 61st minute, old sugar cane Harry Wilson comes out of the backfield, charges it down, holds on to a difficult bouncing ball, by the way, under pressure with some contest, and gets it down on the chalk to keep him in it. And then that fucking fancy T. Ryan does his thing a couple of minutes later. But I think that was the turning point. And that type of fucking hustle, man, is what keeps you in. Like I know we've spoken about it and it was tweeted and all not, but the efforts coming out of Harry Wilson right now, just after he's been through so much shit. He got dropped from the squad. He wasn't included in certain camps. All the reasons in the world he has to go overseas and plays for another club. He's a world-class player. It's well-known across continents, but he's still here and he's still showing up and he's winning games for the Reds on the road when they haven't done it in 25 years. Just how fucking good.
The heart of Falap, that bloke, mate. The heart of Falap. He just keeps going.
Didn't he have a heart attack?
What I want to know... what I want to know is who are the nerds sitting behind a spreadsheet calculating why Harry Wilson can't be in the team? Like whether it's adding up meters over the ad line or whatever bullshit equation they typed into their computer that spat out that, no, let's go with Rob Liotta. No, let's push through with Ted Flanagan. And to overlook Harry Wilson, I mean, it's been 2 years since he's played Test rugby. When you look at the performances he's putting on the park consistently throughout this season, makes you wonder, doesn't it? And I just think he personified the Reds' performance, which was hard. And I look, the caveat is that's not the Crusaders of old. I think I saw a statistic, which is this
don't
year there.
Bring it down, Blake. Don't be the pessimist. Bring up the joy, mate. What are you?
I know. I love your optimism, Richard. But I think it was a good start. It was this year the Crusaders are. They've lost 5 out of 6 games to Australian teams. In the past 42 games, they dropped 2. So obviously they're a different side, but they still put 40 points on the task last week. They look like that they were returning. So this Reds performance was all heart. And I think I love that you pinpointed that Harry Wilson moment, Jim, because you could talk the mad dog. You could talk the junkyard dog. Big dog's got to eat, baby. You could talk about Ryan Smith and his growth as a second rower and what he's bringing to that team. You could talk about Kiss's signings in the front row to stabilize the red scrum when I thought they were going to be in some trouble against the Crusaders. You could talk about all of that. But that moment you've articulated, Jim, Harry Wilson, just through pure effort, I think personifies what this performance was and why, despite the round maybe being 1-5 for Aussie teams, is still a win. It's still a win in Christchurch, 25 years. And that moment, you've hit the nail on the head there, Jim.
The only thing I want to add is, yeah, the Crusaders are shit, right? It's well documented that they suck, but I don't think this was very much a shit Crusaders performance. This was in their grasp. They were going to turn this around. I think this was a really strong Reds performance, more so than it was a really shit Crusaders performance. Yes, they put 40 on the Tars the week before. There were still still strands of that team playing that day.
And I think just to add a little bit extra detail to that is Harry Wilson has been criticized that sometimes he goes a bit missing. He plays a bit loose. But he actually had 15 carries, which was almost double any other player on the Reds team at the weekend, which he enjoys doing. But he also did some of the dirty stuff as well. So it was one of his a really good all-round performance from him, particularly in a team that was didn't have a lot of the ball, obviously didn't have much territory as well, and defended their life out. I think made over 200 tackles in the game. So he it was one of his best performances. The question is, and it's a question for another pod, is think about where what the makeup of that back row is, though, because this, we always be question marks. Yeah, you know, Valentini and Wilson both do jump, but is that the best lineup, best back row option with obviously President Wright as well? So interesting to see whether he is in that first choice 15 or not.
For me, I'm fine with that, and that's one I would go with. But I understand your point there. Friend of the pod too, Harry Wilson. Friend of the pod replied to a tweet on the weekend. Good dude.
How good?
He did. Friend of the pod, mate. He checks out. Man.
But he replies in the good and the bad, doesn't he?
He does.
He's
a good egg, mate. Mm. And I think the other cool thing about the Reds' performance, I mean, there's lots, right? When you put a performance like this on, there's a lot to get around and celebrate. But I think the other thing, which is just fun to celebrate, Australian rugby's had the obsession with size in the back line for so long, just having big, bad ball carriers. You look at the back three, the Reds, like they look like the year 11 maths class. They're just tiny little blokes. And I know Jock Campbell's not that young anymore, but between the three of them, they wouldn't weigh 100 kilos collectively. And it doesn't matter because they are fit, fast rugby players who put themselves in the right position to make the right decision and then persevere with determination. It's quite a nice change. And I think the Reds have certainly been guilty of just picking a big winger.
They've gone back to the pre-professional era prototype brick.
I don't know. It's almost this admission that, like, mate, they're all professional athletes. They're all going to tackle. What difference does 5 kilos make? Give me the rugby player. And it's kind of nice to see.
Well, you can speak to how fitting into 32 size waist pants is much better than a 34 just for general living, can't you?
Mate, just dropping from a 34 to a 32 recently, Jim, I can talk to this.
It's the chafe. It doesn't get enough. The chafe is terrible.
Well, these three blokes are running around chafeless. Poor Sawley all season.
Chafe. Which makes him quicker.
I thought you were up at 36, Jim. I wasn't here at the 36.
It got bad there. But I'm back, baby.
I got a couple of 36s in the closet. I don't get worn often. But when they do, you know it's been a good couple of weeks leading into it.
It's interesting just to talk about size just for one more second. It's interesting the Reds have become, you know, they've taken the idea of it being in its original sense an evasion game rather than a full-on just smash the other contact game. And I like the evasion aspect because it's allowed them to be way more attacking and be more clinical rather than, yeah, they can do the straight up the middle contact at times, but they've got a bit more variety in their attack. And I like Jock Campbell at 15. He's done really well since he's come in.
But earned it to be his jersey, hasn't he?
Absolutely. But they have the capacity to get over the ball. I think they was like 8 or 9 turnovers they won as well. They really are being able to combine two things, you know, that competition at breakdown, but also showing fantastic evasion skills as well, which was also highlighted. And I know we'll talk about the Brumbies at some point, but to your point, I think you said a couple of weeks ago, Severus continues as much as he's a shit bloke, as much as he continues to light it up on this on the scene of the Super Rugby scene. He surely has to be on one wing for the All Blacks in their first game, no?
Oh, mate, 11 rounds into Super Rugby, he's the player of the comp for me so far. He's just taken this whole competition by absolute storm, and to do it like we said previously as the winger on potentially the worst side in the competition is absolutely absurd. Last point I'd sort of like to make about the Reds, I guess 2 points. The first one is, I think we've got to acknowledge the halves. I've come on here and been a bit harsh on Crichton previously and said, you know, their inability to pick and stick a 10 when Liner had the inside running. Crichton had a cracking game and kicked his goals really, really well. I know a lot of Queenslanders talk about his ability and his potential. I hadn't really ever seen that delivered until this week, and I thought he had a really good game. And then Kalani Thomas as the 9, dare I say, they have not missed Tate McDermott. through his three-game suspension. Kalani has just been electric, and his service has been on point as well.
Fuck, they're so good at playing a very wide channel from the ruck. The service coming from that ruck from him and skipping three people, potential runners of the ball, and really attacking the wide. It's a very crisp and nice pass. That was where they were getting the ad line.
His, I know I'm going to get shit for saying this, and I said a couple of weeks ago I really like him as a player, but his pass is better than Tate McDermott's. McDermott is a good all-round player, but his pass to allow the players to go wider and flatter is a different, opens up the Reds a different way. I'm not saying he's going to obviously usurp Tate McDermott. I'm not saying that, but his pass is excellent. He's a quintessential scrum half for a 10 that wants to take it flat. I really like him as a player.
And I think I'll get to this point later. When I wanted to talk about the Rebels and the Tars. But I think one thing is true about Super Rugby, probably more so than internationals or anything like that, it is the depth of your squad. Although it's not the longest competition, only going for 15 rounds, the ferocity of it demands that your full 30-man squad is going to play. And I think where the Australian teams have been exposed, namely the Tars, Force, Rebels, is the lack of depth in that squad. Is that the second halfback or the third prop should be playing club rugby. And when people talk about the need for less teams in Australian rugby, I don't think they're talking about that we can't support five fly halves. I think they're talking about that we can't support 15 props. Or 20 props, which is the number you actually need to get through a season so physical. And I think what is impressive about this Red squad now is that you have a bloke like Kalani Thomas where there is no drop-off. It's just a slightly different style of game. And that is the depth required to be competitive away from home in this competition. And I think him, Crichton, those sorts of blokes speak to that depth in your squad. Or even the Junkyard Dog or Greeley speak to that, having that depth in your squad where you need it, whereas I think the Rebels and the Tars and the Force don't have that. So when it isn't your front line, they could both name a mean front line, but when it's not your front line, things start looking pretty grim. And I think he speaks to that. Last point on the Reds, because we've been on them for a while, is just Hunter Paisami's sensational this year. He really has developed all the strings to his game at the moment. And I wouldn't even say it was his best game, but I think he's just had an absolute ripper of a season. And reports are is that he's all but lost to Australian rugby because the Exeter Chiefs have thrown money at him for a 2 or 3 year deal. And the AIU are only willing to top up for 1 year is the story I've heard. They've got to keep him, don't they?
Yeah, and I think, look, we talked about Fekete being potentially the 12 that puts on the 12 jersey for the Wallabies. He has to be. He's been playing really well, and he's been played at 12 for obviously the Reds. I think if Joe Smith decides that he is the 12 and he knows and he's got the confidence of his coach, I think he's someone who is probably going to commit to Australia a bit longer, but I know money talks. But I think that first squad, that first 15 that's selected, run on 15, if he's in there in that 12 jersey, that will go a long way to keep him.
I still have questions over his defense there. Great on the attack. There's been no questions there. And he used to be the big hit king. But the stick, it's just the stick. A couple of times he just could not stick to the first tackle, which freed up an offload and freed up an extra couple of meters, and their defensive line's out of whack. They're going to run at him. If he can't stick and hold on
to him. I don't think they'll run at him, but I think they might try and evade him, because I actually think that's a valid point. He hits, he doesn't stick. But I do think 12 suits him more than 13. I think he was exposed hitting at 13because he has that propensity to jump out of the line. He's a bit more protected at 12. And if you've got a smart 13 like Lenny Kittel, I think he would look after him and could communicate well. And then if you had a good defensive coach at the Wallabies, which I think they do, I think those issues could be sorted, because he certainly doesn't shirk defensive responsibility. It just doesn't always stick. It's probably a pretty valid point. Hey, why don't we jump, I guess, from this to just talk player movements then? Because we can just dip into the other games quite quickly. Because I think a bit of news this week and out of Tarland, some pretty grim news you know, everyone already leaving that we've spoken about. But then this week they've announced that Wilson's leaving, you know, 105 kilo outside center, who was a schoolboy sensation. Tui Polotu's leaving, absolute gun, 105 kilo inside center. We know Tui Polotu is probably going to go join his brother, play for Scotland, because there's a grandparent there. And I don't think Wilson has Welsh heritage, but he's going to play for Wales. You think if he's there for a couple of years, they're going to find something in the family tree or just keep him there long enough to be well. I don't know. What a fuck up. And we're talking about the need for depth in squads. It just really worries me that every day I flick onto a rugby article and someone else is gone. Is it that dire, or is it just another kid coming along and these guys didn't cut it, so push on?
I think that I'll just give my two cents. I think for those two in particular, do I think it's a massive loss? No. I think there's the drop off
to Parise too. That's three centers at the Tars.
Yeah, but Parise, he's a class above, or he's the next band above those other two. I understand those two are required to create depth, to your point, what you just mentioned about the Reds before. That's what it brings you to be able to win away from home. But I don't see them as a huge loss. Others I absolutely do, but I feel like it might open the door to potential other players to give them an opportunity. And I think outside backs particularly, there's a greater chance of there being out there because of the brand of rugby that's played over here. So in that case, I don't think it's a massive loss. But if it continues and it becomes an ongoing thing, then yeah, it does become a problem, but not for those two in particular. Jim?
I just think, international allegiances aside, look, whatever they want to do, that's fine. Wouldn't you want to leave the Tars too? Wouldn't you be asking the question? Or because if they didn't want to, or there wasn't any interest of what they could be doing other than losing every single weekend, they've only won two games, man. Fine. But something's not working there. It hasn't been working there for ages. They are clearly not feeling like they are sort of in the tipping point of being selected for these Tar teams in the future. They don't feel like they're getting considered for Wallaby selection, which they don't deserve to, let's be honest. And in a fleeting career like theirs tend to be, I think keeping your door open is a smart move. Yeah,
it's I'm not blaming the player.
Sucks to lose them, but the battle was to be fought years ago. It's not right now.
The one for me that actually I'd love your opinion on more is actually Darcy Swain. I think he has the potential to be a superstar. And he's been obviously part of that Brumbies franchise for a while, and he's continued to grow, and he's had a couple of really good games this year. And I think for stability and for an Australian team to succeed at the real highest level at Super Rugby, he needs to stay the Brumbies. But unfortunately, we've seen this week that due to financial issues, which we totally understand, him moving to the Western Force, it makes the Western Force stronger. But actually for him, I mean, his growth, I'm not sure it's the greatest professional move, but I totally get it from a financial point of view.
I think the Darcy Swain one, at this point, we've got to see, even as Brumbies fans, we've got to see keeping him in Australian rugby as the win.
Oh, I agree with that.
The fact we didn't lose into Japan or France. I agree that the merry-go-round of swapping clubs, wrecking continuity, wrecking consistency, it's probably not ideal. But the fact is, a 26-year-old second rower who's been a Wallaby for a couple of years, who I think is underrated, and has captained the Brumbies this year, and he's a massive unit. The fact he's in Australian rugby, I'll fucking take it as a win. And I mean, the bonus is, I know Rodder hasn't re-signed at the Force yet, but if the Force keep Rodder, and then they've got, is it Williams, who's been coaching, captaining them in the second row as well, the younger guy. I mean, there's three pretty good second rowers. And I think the Force, despite their inconsistency, are a team on the up. And maybe there's some leadership opportunities there for Swain. And I guess if you're just looking at it financially, the Brumbies are probably looking at it going, okay, we've got to keep Frost. We've got to keep Tom Hooper. We've got to keep Charlie Kale. And we're not going to keep him if they're not running on. So how do you fit them in the team with Valentini? Well, Tom Hooper probably becomes the second rower.
And this is the problem with your whole philosophy.
And you've got a year left of Neville to, you know, he's 35, 36 years old. You're going to lose him. It sucks. And the Brummies are so good because they've got that depth. You know, the Neville or Swain, someone's not getting picked. That's how good the Brumbies are. I don't think Unfortunately, we have the money to sustain guys not being in the 23. And the Brumbies have probably just done the numbers and gone Frost, Tom Hooper, Kale are the younger priorities. Swain's unaffordable. I don't know, maybe something like that. It sucks, but I'll take that one as a win. The fact that he's staying in Australian rugby. Sorry, Jim, I cut you off there.
Oh, I was just saying the whole like squads, 45 dudes, when you were comp, when you were championship style, like dudes are not happy if they're not playing and not everyone can play. So the model is working against itself.
Yeah, and that's what makes the amount of teams discussion so difficult.
But it'll make the squad a bit bigger, but dudes still want to be playing. And
which is why you've got to keep the Rebels and keep the Force and have five teams.
That's right.
Because otherwise you can't, players aren't playing. So they would all piss off overseas. But then as soon as you do that, you get to week 10, 11, and you've got second graders running on for you once you've had a few injuries.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, I think to be competitive against New Zealand, your team probably needs Darcy Swain on the bench. Your team probably needs Tui Polotu not in the 23. Yeah. That sort of style.
And I think this would be an opportunity to talk about the Brumbies as a whole. You know, they obviously played, obviously, the Drua, and we must mention that the Drua, you know, put up a good fight, obviously, this weekend. But what were your big takeaways from the Brumbies game this weekend, Blake?
Mate, I would say it was a little bit of an underperformance by the Brumbies. And I think that was probably inevitable after the performance against the Canes. They played okay. They played pretty well. I think that's what this game was. And I actually think the Drua are a pretty good side, and they're just big, fast, athletic humans, man. They're a problem. The only worry I have for the Brumbies coming out of this one is how the scrum was bullied. And I, you know, you had Slipper and Alalatoa. I kind of got worries for Wallaby's front row stocks at the moment, because Alalatoa's coming back from injury, doesn't seem to be scrummaging that well. Slipper's not getting any younger. Tubo has regressed from, you know, top two tight heads on earth to shouldn't make the fourth grade subbies team.
That must hurt you to say out loud.
But it's atrocious how bad he's playing. And then Shoop, your next big star, he's been injured all season. Nongor sucks.
Well, I thought Nongor was fucking strong.
Played well off the bench, don't get me wrong, but the fact is he can't even start for the Reds. You'd rather play a Kiwi and a Fijian over him. Doesn't fill you with confidence, does it, for our front row stock? So I got a bit of prop nerves come the Wallabies, whereas 12 months ago, I was like, we're good. Slipper, Halatoa, Tupo, we're Talakai, don't worry about us at prop, but we're getting smashed in the scrum at the moment. So that was my only worry for the Brumbies. Other than that, it is what it is, mate. They beat the Drua at home. They got the job done. They did it fairly comfortably. They didn't play great. Play on. Lenny Kitau was sick, though. There's one thing worth noting. Lenny Kitau was fucking awesome. And I think he just reminded everyone how fucking dumb Eddie Jones is.
Do you think Larkham's got a bit too far? Obviously, we applauded him for obviously trying to change the style of play, being a bit more expansive, trying to embrace broken field play and take less of an emphasis away. Well, not put as much emphasis, should I say, on obviously set piece and those core skills, which the Brumbies were always associated with. Do you think that's hurting the Brumbies at the moment, and the thought that they could just flick a switch is not really materialized, because it's not only the scrum side, but set pieces as a whole have struggled a little bit at times?
Yeah, I don't know. It remains to be seen. I don't think it's let them down in a big one yet. Like when it failed them, it's always been a game they've still won. And then those two games they lost, they didn't show up anywhere. So interesting point. Let's let it play out, that one. Good question, that.
I think it's what is not unclear is how shit the Waratahs were on Saturday. I know it'd be a bit of remiss of us not to talk up the Fijians and obviously how well the Brumbies played, but I think it's right for us to shit on the Tars for a while. And we can't hide behind the fact that it was a second string team or anything like that. There was probably two players really that probably weren't in at first choice 15, really. If you look at Angus Bell, you look at Tane Edmund. Probably that's pretty much that's pretty much it. Maybe put Gamble in there.
Jorgensen was playing club rugby on the weekend too.
Yeah, but even so, that's what, ball players, maybe, you know, to go there and lose 41-12 continues to build the narrative that the Waratahs are going backwards and not good enough at this level and need to change style, need to change play, because to have the score, cricket scores being run up against them, I know 40.
So it's well known that they sent a second string team. Is that what you're saying?
Largely, the argument is that there's 4 games left in the season before this round. They have to win 3 of them. They were not going to beat the Hurricanes away from home. They told a couple of boys they didn't bother packing your bags.
So it was like Sinclair's 50th, and they put him on a second string team when, you know, mate, cheers.
I don't think he's ever admitted, but I'm pretty sure that that's what's happened.
You can't fool the locker room, man. They know.
With Hannigan, Jorgensen, just stay at home, boys. You're right. Harrison had some minutes. Wasn't he a speed bump on the weekend? I know we frothing him a few weeks ago, but he just got run over a few times, didn't he? Look, end of the discussion here is the Tars do not have, I'm going to go out and say it, a single front rower who is even competitive at the Super Rugby level. I would say they don't have a single second rower in the squad. They're all sixes. There's no single. Emma Sierra's the only bloke who's an actual second rower who probably should still be playing Colts. You cannot win rugby without a tight five. Everyone else is on an absolute hiding to nothing. We basically say it every week. What blows my mind with the Tars, though, is Swain is negotiating a contract. Rodder's negotiating a contract. Solokai Lotto, I'm sure, is about to be negotiating a contract. How are they so incapable of fucking recruiting a second rower in that state? Like, why do they just persevere with putting a 6 in the second row and saying she'll be right? Until they have 2 or 3 second rowers, they're fucked. Heaven got injured this week, so they've literally put an SOS out for hookers. The bloke who ran on a
Jim, you're up.
Second grade, second year, Sydney Uni last year. They don't have a tight five, which almost makes it impossible to even comment on the rest of the side's performance. So it was grim. It was shit. The injury thing, someone needs to investigate what's doing with the strength.
No, you need to investigate why no one wants to go there. Why no one wants to go there. If I was an investigative journalist, which I could have been on a different day, there's leakings or evidence on the surface of something far more insidious going on underneath. There's some dirty laundry.
Is this a scoop? ARU has taken over. They've looked at the books. Tars have got a $4.2 million loss. AAU have got a $9.2 million loss. Do the math. That's Australian Rugby sinking the whole $13.5 million loss themselves. They've said, you're getting Suwali and you're getting Kellaway. Get fucked. You can't re-sign anyone.
Just pull the
They're rank. All gone. Swinton's gone. Hannigan's gone. Tui Pilotto's gone. Wilson's gone. By the way, you want a second rower? You can't have one. Is it AAU running the Tars now? Saying, sorry, guys.
Maybe you should speak to Rugby Australia instead. Maybe they've got some different, maybe got some other money down, right?
Well, we've offered them to come on many, many times.
Still phones. Still
and they've
ringing.
Come on a couple of times, of course. Which is...
The other point I would just make on this is I tweeted for anyone who is interested, a combined Tars Rebels squad. And that's a decent squad. But that is, I'm talking for this Tars side to be competitive next year. 15 players need to be injected. Like the bones of a team are not there. The bones of a team are not there.
Think about those two players you mentioned, Suwali and Kellaway, coming in. A lot of responsibility on their shoulders, a lot of pressure.
I don't know what 2 fullbacks is going to do to when you don't have a tight five.
Because even when we're talking about the Reds, not to go back for too long, but the two young 9 and 10s, the reason that they are playing so well is because their forwards are really getting front football, like they absolutely are, which gives them the platform to do something sick in their role. If they
don't, that point, Jim, next week, Harry Jones, rugby journalist, will be on our podcast. And what spurred that on is he said Tane Edmonds should be the Wallabies fly half. And I asked him, I said, no, mate, you got to clarify this for me. What are you talking about? And maybe rightfully or wrongfully, I believe wrongfully, he made the point that he possesses the skill set of a gun fly half and he's kicking it above 85%. And I said, mate, you've just described Noah. that skill set. And his point was, well, Noah's at the Brumbies.
So he can't get picked.
Like, so Tane is, has everything you want in a fly half, but we only see it twice a season because the forwards get pumped every other game. So I'll be interested to hear what Harry has to say about that next week. But that goes to your point, Jim. How can the backs fire?
That's like saying, I've got all the tools here, the timber, the bricks, I possess them all. I just haven't had the chance to build a house, man. That's what it's saying about Tane. I haven't seen it, but I'm happy to hear it next week. But another disappointing, hugely disappointing performance was against the Blues, mate, that Western Force team. Talk to me.
No, it was the Rebels to begin with. But,
the Rebels, sorry. The Western Force fucking sucked too to the Chiefs. They all suck.
Yeah,
well, they just suck.
Let's just talk about both of them collectively. Both performances were below expectation. We talk about the Rebels, first of all, being at home. The Blues obviously had a yellow card down to 10 men, and in that 10 minutes, just after the 10 minutes, they conceded 14 points. Just not good enough from the Rebels. Expected more. Talked about having them an easy draw. Maybe this is the turning point because, not good enough, unfortunately. And the same with the Force as well. So, yes, the Chiefs are very good, but to lose by 49 points, which you got to do better than that, even though you are playing against one of the top four teams in the competition. Play with the heart and the commitment, just like the Australian teams have done this year, because, as I say, that loss is too much.
Really, the way this round went, their top three sides played our bottom three sides, and boy, did it show. And none of those games were competitive. The only pleasing thing I could say is it's taken for round 11 to have that round. And Brumbies and Reds still showed up for their performances, for their games. Whereas last year, I felt like this was most weekends. It was shit, mate. It was absolutely shit. I just want to drill down really quickly on Carter Gordon. Has he James O'Connor'd himself with the rugby community? So obviously in talks with the Gold Coast Titans, the story goes, I'm sure you boys are aware, but his management met with the Gold Coast Titans and they were interested. They're looking for a playmaker. He's interested. Rebels are probably going to fold. And he said his price is $700,000 a year. And from what I understand, they said, thanks, but no thanks. Which you would understand, right? He's not a proven commodity. The top rugby league players are on $600,000-$800,000. Nick Fifita's on $800,000. I don't think he can command that sort of cash. I think he's absolutely kidding himself. But has he sort of James O'Connor'd himself in the sense that now rugby fans are like, all right, mate. So you're happy to go to rugby league. You know, you were picked in the Wallabies for the 2027 future. Remember that Eddie Jones bullshit? Everyone's talking about building for the future. And the first sign of the ship leaking, you jumped off and it's about brand Carter Gordon. Like, is he getting some of that rub? The chat size had is sort of, fuck this kid, if that's his attitude. And I think if you're another Super Rugby team, don't get me wrong, I think he would, should slot into any of them. But if you're the Queensland Reds, you've got three fly halves that are under 24.
Well,
thanks, but no thanks, mate. If you're the Brumbies, you got Noah Loisio. Thanks, but no thanks. You're Jack Debrisen. He's a backup. If you're the Force, you got Ben Donaldson. Then you've got Stewart, who plays 10. You've got Konzel, and you've got Patsatoa, who's been injured for 2 years. Thanks, but no thanks. If you're the Tars, you've got Edmund and Anna Harrison. Like, we have an abundance of fly halves. You want $700,000 in league? Go enjoy Japan, mate. I don't know. Is there a case of that about people upset? I'm a little upset at him for reaching out to rugby league.
Yeah. Look, I don't know if it's true. If it is true, mate, it confirms the long-held theory that he's just an Eshe playing rugby union. And him going up to the Titans of all teams means he's not in it for the legacy, the success, to play in the boots of legends who fell before him. He just wants to get up to the Galdi and hit those clubs on the, whatever that strip's called. I can't even remember. And that's the thing.
None of that is probably true, but that you can't help but feel that the way this has come out, right?
Yeah. So in answering your question, the whole James O'Connor thing of age, who should reach out to him at this point and tell him, dude, there's nothing up there, man. It could be. It looks like a bit, you know, he's taken it for granted.
That's how it feels, doesn't it? Like, it really is how it feels. And I'm sure there is that contract probably waiting in Japan or France for that similar number. You know, and I'm sure his management will find it. It just felt like, I don't know, mate, you were the one fly half we sent to the World Cup.
For 700K.
Yeah. And it was like, have you ever played rugby league?
Nah. Kicky goals, mate.
Okay. And don't get me wrong, I think he'd be a good league player. I think he's a good rugby player. I think he's damaged his brand for a show. And like, I think everyone who started the year on Carter Gordon, maybe Noah doesn't have enough work. Everyone's like, fucking, he Noah, baby. Remember like this time last year, Noah was Carter Gordon who? And everyone's like, well, the bloke is heaps better than you. This year, everyone's like, Noah, baby. I don't know. I feel like he's done some damage to his brand. And that's literally how I would phrase it. And I'm sure just a kid interested, his manager's just finding out what he's worth on the open market, but they should have done better to keep that story quiet. Because I can't help but feel a bit of resentment.
Richard?
Yeah, no, I agree. I don't know. Look, we will never know, but I hope it's just his manager putting the feelers out there, and it's not actually Carter Gordon actually asking to him to put the feelers out, because it does affect your brand, and maybe it's just the manager being a dickhead. Because I think if he'd have said to go to Japan or to France or Europe and said, you know, here's my figure, that's one thing. But to your point, to go to the Gold Coast Titans, that's an extra kick in the teeth.
It's seriously. So odd. It's so odd.
It's just, it's like, which league team has money? Which is the shittest team? Well, let's just put that out.
Yeah.
But let's give him the benefit of the doubt and say, look, it's his manager who's trying to, you know, earn a quick buck for himself. And actually, Carter Gordon is the one who still wants to play in the green and gold, actually do the right thing. So
700K is a lot of vapes. A lot of vapes.
What's the amount I could pay for him?
Yeah, it was gross, mate. And I just thought it was worth bringing up. And actually, the other thing I wanted to bring up is just the state of, because we've been dancing around this topic of retaining talent. Rory Arnold is playing third division in Japan. Samu Krevi is playing second division in Japan. It's a fucking crime. And I don't fault the players for a second, right? I don't. If I could live in Japan and get paid near on $1 million and play fucking third division against a couple of semi-professional Japanese blokes, where do I sign, right? I don't blame. But the fucking state of Rory Arnold, Samu Krevi, Marika Korobetti fucking playing in the lower divisions in Japan. What the fuck it's doing? And I know they've got money. They're fucking knocking around for Hyundai or something. The fucking state of it, isn't it just the worst? Like, it sucks. And I don't blame the players. Do not blame the players. It just is what it is in a free market world of rugby. But just any romanticism of a club or your team's jersey, fuck, we're hanging on by a thread, aren't we?
Yeah, but there's no, due to the franchise nature of this, it's not the tribalistic nature to it. So I don't think, you know, that's ever going to happen. It's not like.
And just who are these Japanese folks thinking, oh, fuck, I'll spend $1 million? To what end? Like, I don't understand. Don't get me wrong. I'm a billionaire. I would fucking happily pay Samu Krevi to play subbies and just watch him rip every week.
Obviously, being a billionaire, you'd still do this podcast and still speak in the same manner, right?
Of course. And I would, you know, chip in with a couple of ads.
That would be nice.
Should we push through to next week?
Yeah, just one thing before we do. I just want to make a comment about the Pacifica. Obviously, they had their first ever home game in Tonga. Obviously, they went down 28-17, but what a spectacle in terms of having that first game on the island. Congratulations to them. Obviously, a loss is disappointing, but hopefully it's a sign of things to come. The more games that we can play in those Pacific islands, the better to grow the game. So
the atmosphere, man, it permeates through the TV. Like, it is not a big empty stadium. It is, you could feel what it means when someone makes a line break. It is really, really special to see. I understand logistics make it very, very difficult. And then even things like ticket prices, even though they get a big crowd, runs at a huge loss because they don't cost what they cost here and blah, 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 blah. And then also the wet season. The rugby season overlaps with the wet season, as we saw, which I think is cool. That adds to the drama. Like, I think I would love it that, you know, if you're playing Moana Pacifica or Fiji through these 3 months, bring your fucking snorkels. You're about to get bashed and drowned. I would like that if that was built into it as part of it, you know? So it was really cool. I echo exactly what you said, Rich. I really, really enjoyed that one.
How good. Moving on to obviously next week's games, which obviously the Pacifica do actually kick us off. But unfortunately, I do believe they're back in New Zealand this time with their home game against, home games in inverted commas, against the Chiefs. Who you're backing? You'd have to say the Chiefs, obviously with the quality that they put on at the moment and the inconsistency of obviously the Pacifica. So surely we're all on the Chiefs, right?
Chiefs 30 plus. But what a shame that they couldn't stay in the islands. You know, well, it's a different game all of a sudden, but it isn't Chiefs 30 plus.
Jim?
Oh yeah. Chiefs 30 plus.
Up at Suncorp, how many are the Reds going to win by, Jim? Or is this a banana skin waiting to happen for them after such a high of this week to follow up with the home game against the Rebels?
It has the hallmarks of banana slip, but I just think the Reds at home are just too damn good, man. So I'm going Reds, easy.
Right?
Rebels are my least favorite team to pick because they're a bunch of 16-year-olds. When they're shit, they look atrocious. And when they're good, you're like, that's a lot of big ball carrying forwards. That's it. Carter Gordon's a gun. So I just find them, you know, off the basis of last week, Reds by whatever. But one to back 2 weeks, fuck, coin toss. I hate tipping for or against the Rebels. I find them very, very prickly. But objectively, common sense would lean towards the Reds. But this is one I would stay away from. Richard?
I think there you'd have to go again, the Reds. The history suggests that they have the better team, 1-15. But I wouldn't be surprised, as my previous comment, I wouldn't be surprised if the Rebels just turned up in an Aussie derby. You get up more for Aussie derbies, probably want to make a point after obviously such a heavy loss, obviously against the Blues this week, but you'd have to go with the Reds. But
really, really quickly before we move on to game of the round, just the Rebels, I'm sure you guys have seen the stories coming out. It sounds like it was, my reading is it was a bit of a tragedy that they won the vote by one, because of the case of they didn't get put out of their misery, but the ARU and the ATO still voted against them. So even though they've got the go-ahead, they don't have the go-ahead from those that matter. So it's just my reading of it, it's just going to be a prolonged court case where staff players won't know anything. Indefinitely. And why would they still be there? I'd be chatting to the Gold Coast Titans in that situation. It looks pretty grim down at Rebel Town, doesn't it?
Absolutely. But Jim, what do you think we should we play a drinking game that every time that Blake calls the Rugby Australia, the ARU, we should take a shot or something?
Well, what are they called, mate? Fucking, it's irrelevant if they rebrand themselves, if they tell it to a pigeon and a squirrel.
Just that old dude everyone knows, they just can't embrace change because it's just too quick for him. That's what he sounds like.
All right. Well, the next game is Auckland versus Wellington.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Definitely an Eden Park game of the round, closely followed by the Tars Brumbies, but you'd have to go with the Blues just because they're at home and I think they are potentially building momentum. Obviously the Canes are still very good, but probably ahead of where we thought. So because they're at home and Eden Park factor, let's go with the Blues. Boys?
Blues are a good team. I don't love what I see as much as I do with the Canes. I feel like the Canes are a much more complete package, wind in their sails, and a lot to prove in this encounter. I reckon all of New Zealand will be watching this game. I'm going to go Canes on this one.
It's a absolute ripper of a game. Had the Canes not slipped up against the Brumbies, Canes all day, baby, but they did slip up against the Brumbies.
Leaning into the Canes all day.
But when I just look at these, well, it's interesting. When I look at their teams, Blues just have so much firepower. But the Blues have had firepower for 25 years and done fuck all since Carlos Spencer. So they always find a way to fumble the bag, the Blues.
And it might be one of those that despite their firepower, the Canes just sort of out-rugby them. But with all of that said, I think I'm with you, Richard, and I'm on the Blues line here. But it's going to be a ripper.
How would you like the next game to be introduced? Do you want to go old school Blade again, you know, with Otago and Christchurch or Canterbury?
Canterbury, sorry. Otago and Canterbury, the Battle of the South Island Farmers.
Yeah. Who are you going with?
Who cares? How nice is it that these two teams are irrelevant for once? Highlanders are certainly getting better. They are traveling back. Look, for me, it's as simple as Scott Barrett and what's his injury like. They were beating the Reds. Scott Barrett came off injured. They sucked. And I think he's that consequential to the Crusaders outfit for me. And then is Rob Penny going to pick shit props or the All Black props? He sits on the bench for 70 minutes. Like he's just the worst coach I've ever seen. I don't know. Your brain says Highlanders, but when I look at those colours, the Crusaders are winning, aren't they? Like it's ingrained in my consciousness.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to go for the Crusaders as
well. I'm going Crusaders here too.
No logic, really, but you just got to back them. Lee Halfpenny to score a winning try in the corner. You know?
How is his first goal kick?
It's Lee Halfpenny.
Just shanked it. That blew my mind, mate. Lee Halfpenny lined up a goal kick and shanks it. And I was like, welcome to the Southern Hemisphere. That's how we do it. He hasn't missed a kick since 1948. Put him in the Southern Hemisphere, kicks like Carter Gordon.
Next game at Allianz, which we are going to, feel free to come and give Jim a hug if you see us. Obviously,
this is the people's choice. If the Blues change this game of the round, this is the people's choice.
Absolutely. There's the split between the rugby podcast, obviously the two Brumbies fans, and obviously, well, what if the Brumbies don't do very well, you'll jump onto the Tars bandwagon, but surely the Brumbies by a loss, unfortunately. Now the Tars will get up because of the rivalry, absolutely, that are between the two of them. And obviously at home, they have been way more competitive, but you'd have to say the Brumbies more than by 7, no?
Mate, Jim had a missed call from DC. They are desperate for hookers. That is the state of things at Tarland.
But like, fuck, I saw him.
And the AAU won't pay him. And they came up as AAU on his phone.
I saw it ringing and went, oh, fuck. I'm not answering that. It's not like I came back and had a missed call.
All right. So all going Brumbies, right?
Absolutely. But we will be there.
Yeah. And that last game, which is equally not that relevant, a Western Force Truer.
Bit of a nightcap.
Yeah, the Western Force grow an extra leg at home. So let's go with the Force. Obviously, the Truer will be a threat. Scrummage really well, very elusive. Let's go with the Western Force at home in Perth.
I would have said until last week, and the Force just looked so god-awful, and the Truer looked fairly competitive against the Brumbies. So I'm going to go the Truer for the upset. Are they even the underdogs? I don't know. I feel like they should be.
Jim?
Yeah. I'm going Force here. Too much to play for. They're investing a lot into this team. You can't just fucking chill out 2 weeks in a row.
Absolutely. Just to bring it to a close, thank you to all those people who are now following us on our very own Spotify channel. Obviously, continue to do that. We are obviously moving away from Green and Gold. So thank you for obviously all of that support.
How would they find us, Richie?
Obviously through Apple or through Spotify or whatever podcast provider, just at the Rugby Report Card. So just type that in and you'll see a red, a green and yellow little icon pop up. So yeah, continue to follow us there. Also,
and make sure you like it, leave a review too. Get it out there and spread it. Share the love. Absolutely. Let the people know.
Also follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Lots of good things happening on Instagram at the moment too. So thanks for all your support, guys. And look forward to chatting with Harry Jones next week.
And Britt McKay, I believe, as well. We're pairing up with some other rugby podcasts. It's going to be a belter.
Going to be a little bit of a debate format, is it not?
Debate, yes. Richard is chair. Me and Jim versus Britt and Harry.
Fantastic. Oh, I love that. That's a great idea. All right, boys.
We will come at them with wild, untrue statements and it will throw them.
Yeah, but if I'm the mediator in the middle, I'm just going to award the victory to you anyway, yes? So,
exactly.
Or just to piss you off them, maybe. All right.
I'll wear a suit.
Oh, I look forward to it. Look dapper as always, Jim.
Of course.
All right. Thanks, boys. Catch you next week.
You're right.